Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 272 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Din Hilton, and today I've got a man that doesn't need a preseason. He's already in midseason form. It's Levon, better known as Barcelev.
Hey guys, what's up?
Yeah, I mean, clearly in midseason form. Hey, what's up? That's all you get midseason. You don't get anything else, nothing, because we were talking about the preseason and the first match for FC Barcelona against Nastic. So as we know, I did it yesterday, a five things we learned as a match review that's up on YouTube. And I figure we go through those talking points and go from there. Though the first thing I took away, Levon, was in that 45 minutes of anybody in the first match of the preseason, not even the third match of the preseason, but the first match of the preseason, it doesn't mean a gosh darn thing. Anything that you took, any takeaways, not to kind of take away everything that we're about to talk about and pretend that what we're talking about is meaningless, but it, I mean, again, we mentioned before we got on the air, 45 minutes of Gerard Piqué, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's 45 minutes of more wear and tear on his knees, though. But it's only 45 minutes.
Right. I mean, same thing with Umtiti actually right next to him, speaking of wear and tear on the knees and trying to figure out. I mean, for Umtiti, it means more than Piqué because he's not only out of the team, he's not going to play himself into the team, but he can look healthy enough where they can at least evaluate what kind of player he could be this year, that being Barcelona or another club. For Piqué, he's going to get his spot no matter what. And you could say that for Sergiño Dest, he'll get his spot. Well, I don't know. He's in a competition with Emerson, but 45 minutes for him isn't going to change that competition with Emerson, I don't think. The thing it was nice to see, though, was the 2,000 fans at the Johan Cruyff Stadium. I thought that was, you know, it was just good to see fans in the stand watching FC Barcelona. It was the first time that they've gotten to see the first team in, what was it? Since March of 2020. So it's been a long, long time since fans actually got to see the first team in the stadium. So you want to get to the first half, or do you got a point about the stadium?
I like the stadium. I went there last season. Mm. And unlike the Camp Nou, when in the Camp Nou, I either like to sit in the second ring or the third ring. When you go to the first ring, even though that first ring holds a lot more people than the whole Johan Cruyff Stadium, it does not really matter where you sit in that first ring, your view of the pitch sucks. It's not well designed. Because first of all, the stadium, like you're too low. You're too low, so you don't have a good overview of the pitch. You have to strain to see what is happening on the other side of the pitch. If you sit behind the goals in the Camp Nou, it's terrible. Because especially with Barcelona playing in the other team's half, it just basically means that you lose 45 minutes of football and you wish you had not spent those 80 euros and stayed home or watched in a bar. However, the Johan Cruyff Stadium, and I have tickets for the upcoming friendly on Saturday, is very nice. If you sit behind the goal, even if it's in the first row, you still see the whole pitch because mm-hmm. That stand is more vertical. I like that stadium a lot.
Yeah, I'm excited. The next time I would ever get to Barcelona, whenever international travel is opened up again, I'm excited to go see the Femini. I'm excited to go see Barca B in that stadium for sure. Yeah, at the Johan Cruyff Stadium. And I think for Barcelona too, whenever it's time to do the Camp Nou stuff, we saw that Real Madrid got away with it last year. Now it's a lot harder to do in a pandemic. So again, Real Madrid got pretty lucky that they did their stadium updates while the pandemic was going on, so they played in the Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium. But for Barcelona, having that Johan Cruyff Stadium just, I mean, they're going to have to figure it out with ticket price and everything, but if they ever do get to the point where they financially can make those adjustments and renovations to the Camp Nou, well, having games in the Johan Cruyff Stadium, from what I've heard from you and from many others too, that it could be much, much worse. Like, yes, figuring out how to get so few less people, it's basically everyone has to assume they're not getting to go while the renovations are being done at the Camp Nou. Just assume you're not going to the game. But that said, yeah, the Johan Cruyff Stadium is a, I think it's actually bigger than Elche Stadium, or the way Elche Stadium was when they first came up to the Liga. It is, Elche Stadium now is much bigger, but when Elche first came up to the Liga, they were at like 1,800, and then they were able to get it to up to standard. And we've actually seen that from a bunch of clubs too. I think Huesca was the same way, where Huesca had a too few, and then they upgraded to whatever is now, what, 35 or 30 or 30 or whatever, 10,000 or whatever it is now to get there.
Okay. Well, apparently now the idea is to, when we start to renovate the Camp Nou, to no longer go to the stadium on Montjuic, the Olympic Stadium,
right?
But to go to Johan Cruyff, which, you know, I don't like the idea of going up to Montjuic at all because of the transport. But what is making it worse is that in order to go there, you have to go past Plaza de España, which is a famous traffic circle here in Barcelona, and they are going to do renovations on that square.
Yeah.
So it's going to make it even more difficult to go up to Montjuic. So now the new plan is to go to the Johan Cruyff Stadium, which holds exactly 6,000 people. So I don't know how 80,000 season ticket holders are going to fit in a stadium of 6,000 people. But then apparently they've done some studies, and the plan is to temporarily add stands so that it can hold in between 50 and 60,000 people. I'm not an architect. Somebody needs to explain this to me. I'm completely lost. This sounds insane to me.
Yeah, I have a good friend who's a civil engineer, so I'll have to ask him. But the reason you and I are on this show isn't for our architectural knowledge or civil engineering. It's because we watch preseason games, and that's what we spend our time doing. So I want to go back into the players in the field in the preseason against Gimnastique. It's a 4-0, but we won't talk about the goals until later on. The first half is, I think, what you kind of take in, because you take the first team players in the first half largely. The reminder of that lineup was Neto in net. You had Balde, Umtiti, Piqué, and Dest as the back four, and Barca playing in a 4-3-3. It was a traditional 4-3-3. None of that fancy 3-5-2 stuff that Koeman had out, but it was a 4-3-3. So Balde, again, was one of the junior players on the back line. Then the midfield, Puig, Pjanic, and Roberto, three first-team players. And then up top, it was Pepe Polo on the left wing, Jordi Escobar on the in the middle, and Yusuf Demir on the right. So all three players who did not play for FC Barcelona at any level last season were your front three to start the preseason. Now, before we get into any of the players, one other caveat I want to add here is that I know preseason usually doesn't mean anything at all. I understand that, especially for the first-team players. But this is the youngest, and this is due to the international competition and the financial things that the club is dealing with at the moment, registering players, et cetera, that this is the youngest preseason group that I've ever seen. In like the 15 years I've been covering the club, this is the youngest group I've ever seen in preseason at this juncture. Now, by the third or fourth when they're playing against Stuttgart, I believe is on the schedule, by the time they're getting to those third and fourth preseason matches, obviously, you know, Griezmann and De Jong will probably feature in the next one. Lenglet will feature in the next one. They'll be back, and so things will get older. But for this one in particular, it meant a lot. There was definitely something going on with the B players. It meant a lot to them to be able to feature and play in this game. So I think what you read from it is the players that kind of got their debuts. And even last year against Gimnastique, Conrad De La Fuente got his Barca debut, if you will, against Gimnastique. And then you kind of get the sense that, oh, Ronald Koeman is looking at this player to potentially be a part of the team. And he was. He was on the bench, what, 16 times or something. And he did make his debut in the Champions League in a way that, last season at least, Alex Callado didn't. So Alex Callado was B-team all last year. Conrad De La Fuente was that winger who was in the first-team circulation. So from this, you know, what we can garner from these Barca B players is they're all kind of in the preseason, so we can't really figure out which ones are going to be in the first team dynamic or not. But that said, the ones that impress us are probably impressing Koeman as well.
Or not. We'll see, because last season was also a little bit unpredictable in this sense, right? However, what we did learn from Koeman last season, that, you know, if he sees a 17-year-old that he likes, he's not going to doubt one second and give him playing time. So obviously everybody knows what happened with Pedri. last season. He came in the preseason and people were like, okay, so what is going to happen with him? Is he going to go out on loan in order to get more experience? Is he going to fight for minutes off the bench or off the stand and fight for minutes somehow? And he ended up being one of Koeman's most used players. So that magic could strike again. So I think all of the players who are involved in these matches and this preseason, they notice. They have their hopes and dreams, I am sure.
Yeah, and one of those players that, speaking of playing time, it was a player who's already a first teamer last year. So I think the thing we're going to start with, let's do it. Let's be contentious. Let's start with the Ricky Pooj business. A lot of the internet, no surprise here, a lot of the internet felt like he had a good match. What did you see from Ricky Pooj yesterday?
I thought he had an okay match. A lot of the internet was in love with his performance, used yesterday's performance to say, hey, you know, you see that this this trainer is not a very good person and probably does not treat his own mother right. They used it as an example of why it is insane that he is not playing. But I see is the most talented player in that age range, considering that he is already in his 20s. Mm-hmm. Not all of the youth players we saw yesterday have already gained his experience. Playing against Nastić, being very involved, but not really making a difference in the end. So yeah, he had some nice passes. He also had some sloppy passes. He had one moment that, you know, makes you want to pull your hair out when he played that ball in his own half across the defense right into the feet of an attacker. That's the cardinal sin that they teach six-year-olds never ever to do. So I think for a player of his talent at this point of his career, if he really wants to fight for a place, he needs to do better than what he did yesterday. And again, yesterday is just 45 minutes in the preseason. You know, this is not 45 minutes on which you want to make any final conclusion on what Ricky Pooj can give us during a season. Because he's a player I like a lot, a whole lot. But I don't think that yesterday will have been a game that impresses a coach who is not as enamored with Ricky Pooj as a lot of the fan base is.
Yeah.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what we want from a player. You've said it right. There's 45 minutes. I don't know what we want from a player that played 24 times last year, didn't even get the invite to the Olympics. And I'd prefer him at the Olympics, actually, than Pedri, of course. I wish that Pedri was playing. I wish he wasn't involved in preseason at all and at home relaxing somewhere or, you know, and with his family. And instead it was Pooj at the Olympics. Pujols played under 600 total minutes last year. So just the 45 minutes he played last season was 1/12 of what he played all of last season in the, with the first team. So I did expect him of all players to be sloppy when tasked with being the player that's going to dictate the match. And I think that is the one thing that you can always hang your hat on, that I know he was sloppy and there are no stats or numbers that I can use. But I mean, I thought Ricky Pujols was the best player in the first half. And that's even by design, that with Nastic sitting back, as you and I spoke about off air, that with Nastic sitting back, he was the one who was orchestrating, or he was the one tasked with breaking those lines and being the important player. And I think what that tells me, in the positive that I try to find the silver lining, is that when you look at the other players who were with him, Roberto and Pjanic, well, that may not be their style, but they also weren't breaking Nastic. They weren't really making a true difference. The one time it was Roberto got forward, Ricky Pujols was the one who played him in. That happened on two occasions. That Pujols was the one who set up Roberto on a platter to be able to put that in the ball in the back of the net. And while Roberto's movement was good, again, it was the passing from Ricky Pujols that got him free, that played him free into space. So I thought Pujols being the focal point of Barcelona, you're right. It was 0-0 and it wasn't good enough. He didn't break him open. But also with context, what are we expecting of Ricky Pujols this season? Right? Last year, he had 600 total minutes. I think a successful season for Ricky Pujols this year would to be get about 12 to 1300 total minutes. So come off the bench a lot more, but take his 5 to 11 minutes that he averaged coming off the bench and make yourself a 25 to even sometimes 45 minute player coming on at halftime if you really need an attacking change to change the dynamic of the team, or come in the 35th or the 70th minute or the 75th minute and become that dynamic player that you were in the last 5 minutes in the Granada comeback an extra time or whatever it may. So regardless of how well Ricky Pujols does, like, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about the difference between actually being a consistent sub who gets 35 minutes or being a player who's once again on the fringes, getting 5 minutes or not playing at all and basically asking, why are you still here? But if he's playing 30 minutes or 35 minutes once or twice a week, he's just a member of the team. And it's, I mean, the people who call for him to start, he's not going to start with Pedri, De Jong, and Busquets. Get over it. Like, and now you have, if they get that central midfielder that Koeman wants, he's not going to start over against that guy either. So you begin with Ricky Pujols as fifth on the center midfield depth chart. That's where he begins his season. And again, what are the expectations of total minutes, of his role, of the important games he plays in? Will he come off the bench in an important group stage Champions League match because he's a vital member of the team, or will he just sit on the bench, just as Quique Setién did with him against Bayern Munich? And, you know, for the man who let him play, he also kept him on the bench when the matches truly mattered when the COVID pandemic ended. So I just wonder what we want from Ricky Pujols and what kind of role he can make for himself and how important he'll be to the team.
I think when Setién put him on the bench, it was ridiculous because during that stretch of the season, those 10, 11 games, Pujols was our best midfielder.
Yeah.
Having seen him be the best midfielder on our team, I would like for him to, you know, really, really push. And I want him to be more than just the occasional 30 minutes or even a regular 30 minutes on the pitch. I want him to fight for a starting spot, or at least be good enough so that the coach will trust him with starting spots. Now, it might be that our midfield is not the same. It's not the same if you're in the midfield with Vidal and Rakitic, or being in the midfield with De Jong and Pedri and or Busquets, because the spaces that you leave behind might not be covered as well as with those previous two guys who are generally more cautious to begin with, right, on the ball. So, yeah, but what I really want for both Koeman and for Pujols is to work out a way so that he can be a meaningful part of the team. Mm-hmm. Like you said, have regular appearances, also start, maybe get 10 starts this yep. season. I would also say that right now, he should be our fourth midfielder, right? We have Busquets, we have De Jong, we have Pedri.
Yep.
He likes, as of now, is not in the first team. Sergio Roberto, God forbid, should not start over Ricky Pujols. Yeah. Am I overlooking anyone here?
I mean, no, because Pjanic is the other one.
And Pjanic is the other one, yeah. And Pjanic had even less minutes than Pujols last season.
No, you're not. And I think that's true about Ricky Pujols, that we argued, and I don't think we argued, because Frances and I would go back and forth about this a lot. I mean, the people who, again, are calling for Puig to start over Pedri, I think that's just trolling. That's not a real good faith argument. But that said, the gap between Pedri and Puig needs to be closer, because if Spain makes the Olympic final, Pedri would have played in 72 matches. That's too much. Like, it's the same thing I said with Ansu Fati, that these 18-year-old, 17-year-old bodies are not built for this. They can run and they're going to feel fine and they recover just fine. But I mean, you and I are over the age of 30, that you know now that it's the older we get, the sins of my past, the number of hits I took in basketball, the number of hits I took in soccer, the number of hits I took in ultimate, those add up on my body already. And I don't play and train and do I was doing 1/10 of what they were doing and physically taking. And I never played against grown men, right? When I was growing up. And yet for me, it's like, oh, I have this injury from this year and this little toe thing from this year or this knee thing from this year. And it adds up over time. And so for Pedri, he needs to rest. He needs to be rotated. And so Puig has to convince Koeman that, just like you said, hey, I need to start 10 matches. I have to be able to start against Celta de Vigo. That game is going to be wide open. It is every year. Let me start against and take advantage of the space that Celta de Vigo is going to leave him behind. Let me start against Mallorca. Let me, you know, he has to be able to say, I need to start in those matches because Pedri doesn't, he needs to rest. He needs to be rotated. And I think when, in the case of Messi in particular, we always see it from the position of the player that needs to be rested instead of the player that needs to be good enough to take that spot for those occasions. It's not a bad thing to do that. So I think where you and I agree is the fact that Puig's role next year needs to be better, needs to be defined. And that means that, I mean, Koeman needs to be patient with him, I guess, a bit, but he also needs to step up to that challenge. And I think he generally does that. And so there is no miscommunication between he and Koeman. I think he would have truly left the club. I know he says he wants to stay, but for the amount of money he makes, he would have left the club if he truly didn't believe and Koeman didn't truly give him the idea that he would feature if he earned it, if he got to some threshold, if he convinced him. If there was zero shot of him convincing, he would be gone because he does not make enough money not to go somewhere else. I know he loves Barcelona, but it does come down to business at a certain point. And this is now year three of breaking into the first team, of being 21 and about to be 22.
Not just business, playing football. Ultimately, I think
he wants to play. Yeah,
he wants to play football, and it's a credit to him that he wants to do that at Barcelona. And we're all rooting for him to make it. Now, what happens if the same happened as last season? Because last season, he almost broke through. There was this, like, somewhere halfway through the season, Koeman started trusting him. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, he likes Moriba. And Puig disappeared to the bench again. Imagine that. That happens this season with Nico Gonzalez, where Nico Gonzalez passes him in the pecking order. It could very well be.
But I think that comes down to what Koeman wants from a certain position. Because Nico and, Ilash and Puig are not the same player. They're not even playing, again, the same role. That Puig is trying to back up Pedri. That's what he's trying to do in that location on the field. Ilash is playing much deeper for times, and also when he makes his runs forward, he's doing a different job than Puig. And the same thing is going to be of Nico. Nico is a defensive midfielder or an interior, but a defensive-minded interior. They're not the same player. So is a game needing Puig, or does a game need Nico Gonzalez? That's who's coming off the bench. And I don't think it's a compliment to FC Barcelona, even though they were playing really, really well, that they needed the Ilash and Puig wound up just being surplus to requirements because no game, or at least Koeman felt like no game, desperately needed what Ricky Puig was going to bring to the table. It's not a knock on Puig, just to say that they're different players and Koeman needed a certain profile.
Definitely. But part of it is also what each profile gives you, right? So there's a trade-off with what Puig gives you and what he doesn't give you versus what he likes gives you. So yep. Part of that is also down to Puig. If he pushes that trade-off into his advantage by playing even better, then you know the coach might make a different decision. I would say that the disadvantage here is that we continue to have forwards who do not defend very well. You know, we just signed Depay and Kun Agüero, two more forwards that do not defend. So then Koeman might even more want to balance it out by having players on the pitch in midfield behind those attackers who are a bit more reliable on defense, or maybe a bit more careful when it comes to passing the ball.
Yeah, right, exactly. Counterattacks is the only way that Nastic was going to get any goal in the back of the net, and they had to be careful because yesterday, in that first half in particular, when Nastic had all of their players before the red card, before that game got a little weird and funky with the red card, you know, Nastic had their game plan, and Barcelona just couldn't really break it down just due to the, not only the personnel they were playing, but the positions on the field and defensively cutting out those counterattacks. It wasn't cohesive. And again, I add to preseason that you had 11 players who had never played together before. And that's always important, even though some of them are veterans or they've been working together now for four days to a week in preseason. Yusuf Demir just came off the plane like a week ago. And that's why I'm going to, the rest of this time now, we went a long time on Puig. So for the rest of this, we're basically going to be talking about the young players from the end of the first half and for the first half and the second half. So Yusuf Demir, he was the new bright shiny toy to see. He is the player that I think, just based on his valuation, based on his potential, based on the get that he was. I mean, it should be celebrated that Barcelona were able to convince this player at 18 to come to Barcelona on loan, not, you know, wait on that big payday, and then potentially be bought for just 10 million euros next summer. Because if he had stayed at Rapid Vienna or he had made another move, he could have gone for 40 to 50 this summer, just like Trincao did. I'm not comparing them as players. I know they both started on the right wing. They're very, very different. But Yusuf Demir was a guy that I had heard about 2 years ago, even as being a very high potential player. That said, I think he was, I think, as good as advertised. He was as good as what I had seen in inklings, not just in YouTube highlights, just but of the way that he affects the game. And he was given the job of basically playing the Messi role, which is a good role for a player of his quality to play. If you have a left foot like his, he had some good diagonal balls to Balde, including one in the 44th minute. He got a shot on goal just a few seconds later. That was a good shot, found space. I mean, he also found Puig over the top in the 42nd minute, which is probably his best ball of the day, just a lofting ball in. So he did show you things. And I thought that he got more comfortable as the first half went on, which is exactly what you want to see. He didn't look, he really didn't get on the ball. He didn't look like he knew what he was doing too much in the first 15 minutes or so. But again, he's an 18-year-old who just got off the plane to FC Barcelona playing with Puig and Piqué and Umtiti and under Koeman. And I think what helped him too was that having Sergiño Dest overlapping with him as he was cutting in, that partnership worked really, really well. And then again, on the other side, having Balde and his speed getting into that lane for the diagonal balls, it didn't really matter that Peque Polo, who I'll talk about in a second, I don't want to beleaguer and be mean to Peque Polo, but he wasn't really truly going to affect the game much. I mean, he might have got on the end of a ball, but he doesn't really have necessarily a skill set that's going to break down a team in the way that Demir did. It's not really comparing the two on the wings. So yeah, I thought Demir was good. And if you had to predict, Levon, how much of Demir we'll see this year with the first team, what would be your guess? Not based on 45 minutes, just based on potential and, I mean, even the role that he could maybe carve out with the first team.
I think therein lies the difficulty, the role. Talent-wise, I can see him getting some games, sure. That kid was born to play football. I mean, mm-hmm. It's very, very nice to see. I remember reading that his dad said that he wanted the club to bring him on very slowly. So I think even from the players' camp, the idea is that he will play in Barça B, which might be the best for him, for his development. It might be better for him to play the whole season at Barça B and be kind of one of the leading players there than to fight for minutes in the pressure cooker that is the Camp Nou. Also, I think, you know, yeah, some young players make it in the Camp Nou. We have Pedri as an example, but Pedri also has a very special personality that allows him to stay grounded. Pedri has lived in Spain for his whole life. Mm-hmm. Yusuf Demir just got here. So there's a whole adaptation process that he needs to go through, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. And that's a lot to take in for an 18-year-old. So I would not at all be disappointed if he hardly features for the first team. Then again, with Koeman, you never know.
Right.
I think a lot might depend also, like, you know, is Dembélé going to renew? If Dembélé renews, will he be fit? Is Ansu Fati going to be fit?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we have all of these forwards who are not playing for various reasons, are Braithwaite and Griezmann going to end up getting sold? Then you're going to look at a very different team composition, mm-hmm. in which all of a sudden there is a gap where Koeman, just out of necessity, we'll start using the best players of Barca B that he can find, which might very well mean, hey, Yusuf, you're playing. You're traveling to the Bernabeu next week. Who knows? However, if we don't sell a lot of people, if Ansu Fati and Dembele are fit,
which is what we want. I like to be clear. Like that just, I mean, in the perfect world, Dembele and Fati are fit. That's what we want. But but to your point about like the sales, that's changing hourly and daily. That whether Griezmann's at the club or not is changing again per the hour. Not just about that swap, but about what Barcelona, how they could potentially get his wages off the books. You're seeing what the path forward is for Barcelona to get those players registered, the new players, and to get Messi to be able to re-sign. It comes through the wages of Griezmann. Now you're saying the quiet part out loud, and that's where the numbers aren't aligning. And Dembele currently is injured, but yeah, I mean, what if you can't get rid of Coutinho at all? Did Coutinho just sit in the stands the entire time? Because if he's going to refuse to leave and he's okay with not playing, now you're just talking about Gareth Bale. And
Coutinho's going to be in the stands, because if we play him, then we have to pay Liverpool another 20 million.
Oh, right, yeah, that too.
So that would just make things more expensive. I think what will probably happen is the only thing that Laporta can do, if people refuse to leave, then what Laporta will do is he'll just tear up the contracts and rescind all of those contracts, make the players sue the club, and then at least we don't have to pay anything this season. We won't have to pay until it is resolved in the courts, which might take 1 or 2 years.
Yep. And then going back to the Demir point, it's always easy to get very negative very quickly, but for Demir, I'd say we're at a 96% chance that the club pays the 10 million euros for him next year. I think with the idea that he's going to play for most of this season for Barca B, I don't even know if there's a way, because of the potential he has and what we even saw for 45 minutes, there's no way that he's going to stink up the joint so bad with Barca B in the third division that Barca isn't going to be willing to bring him in for 10 million. I can't imagine a scenario where he is so bad that they don't go for it, because he, again, was with the Rapid Vienna first team since 2019. It's been 2 years of first team football he's already played. And now he is choosing, as you mentioned, his camp is choosing to say, hey, I'm going to go from the first division in Austria, and I think I'm going to go just about this much down to the third division in Spain. I think that said, Austria, Vienna, and Rapid Vienna, and
this much up.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. So Red Bull, what do you mean? Like the Austrian division is better than third division in Spain?
No, maybe the third division in Spain.
I don't know.
Is a bit better than the Austrian.
I mean, there is Red Bull. Red Bull Salzburg does some damage in the Europa League sometimes. Rapid Vienna, Austria Venn. So at least the top three or four teams in the Austrian division are better than any team you're going to see in the Spanish third division. But yes, at the bottom of the Austrian division, those teams get relegated. You're talking about similar caliber players or worse to the Spanish third division. So I'll give you that. That said, he did play on one of the quote unquote giants in Austria, and he played for them for 2 years in their first team dynamic. So by choosing to play for the B team, it tells you the club is an investment in him. So as I said, I might even be low with 96% chance that he signs for the club next year and then is integrated in the first team. Okay, so but that said, I do want to shift from Usef Demir, who I want to mention too, me and my nerd stuff. Hans Krenkel, the only other Austrian to play for FC Barcelona, played from 1978 to 1981. He just missed out on my top 50 list that I did almost 2 years ago, but he is one of the top 50 players in terms of quality that ever played for Barca, but he only played 3 years for the club, which just wasn't enough time to be one of their top 50 most important or best players. But if he had played for 10 years for Barcelona, then he probably would have been one of their top 50 players ever. So not much of an Austrian history, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. But please bring us back to earth, Milan.
No, just to go back to Yusuf, the only thing that I would that I ask myself if he goes to Barca B is who's going to play on the right wing.
For Barca B or for the first team?
For Barca B.
Because he'll play in the middle as an interior, you're saying?
I mean, are you going to move Elias off of that right wing spot?
Oh, because it's too redundant, you mean?
This is supposed to be his season in Barca B, right? He's supposed to make the jump this time for real.
Oh, with Comas?
To that
I mean, I'm not to sure. That level. I mean, he himself has just turned 17. So I think, right. I know he's a very talented player, but there are things that he needs to work on in terms of talent. I know he's a year and a half younger than Demir, but the gap is a year and a half worth of time. So I mean Elias last year even only made 4 appearances for Barca B. So this year, even if he's a sub or a member of the team, and again, if Demir gets called to the first team, you have Elias there. I mean, I think you might see a player like a 19 or 20 year old Zachariah Gailan, who just re-signed. He's a right winger or left winger. I think you might see him as a traditional winger out there on the right wing quite a lot for Sergi Barcelona, because they're going to play a 4-3-3. So I think you're going to want some wingers there. And I think there's going to be rotation. And I also think Demir, because he can play as an interior as well, I think you're going to see him in the third division as an interior quite a lot. So there's no reason why those two won't play together. Yeah, it does make spacing weird because they both like to pick up the ball, cut in on their left foot, and they're very, very similar in that way. But their talent in the third division of Spain is so much so that you'd expect that they're going to figure it out how to play together and find those space and work through that. So I'm not too worried about that. But that said, I want to mention, too, part of that Barca B dynamic and the way that that team is going to be formed this year, it's puzzling to me. Not only is Garcia Pimienta gone, but with Sergi Barcelona coming in as a new coach in a new direction, the direction of the transfers has also changed, where we saw Peque Polo, who, for me to have to Google a player as he's playing, as he's featuring, playing alongside Gerard Piqué, is to say something. And with him being the left winger to start out wide yesterday, again, I'm doing my research on him as the match is going on, and it's interesting that he came back. I'm happy for him because he's a 20-year-old who spent the last two seasons on loan away from Barcelona. So last year, it was 15 appearances in the third division for UD Poblenès. I can say I didn't watch a single match that UD Poblenès played. I don't think I could even find it in the U.S. He had just 3 goals. And then the year before that, he played with Olot, with Arnau Camas, who also started that second half as a center back, where he had 1 goal in 18 appearances. But to start on the left wing with the first team players, maybe he did what Comas did as well, and he did improve. And there, I think for the academy, there was always this idea that when a kid got to be 18, 19, 20, when they were sent out on loan for Barca B, it's a death sentence. I can't think of, other than Comas, again, I can't think of the last player that went out on loan for Barca B, with the B team, I mean, and then came back and actually featured. Usually going out on loan for the B team means that you're going to come back and immediately be sold. So for now, the second player in 2 years to be featured with Barca B and potentially get a big role, if you will, I think it's indicative of the patience that I think that they're now willing to have with the B team. And they're willing to actually see improvement with these players. And those loans aren't just throwaway loans. They aren't just to get this player, you know, some experience, if you will, to sell them on later. It's to say, hey, hopefully this player can figure it out. And the same with Jordi Escobar in the inverse, that he's on a 1 year loan from Almeria. And at 19, he actually struggled with Almeria B last year. He could come back into the club, come into Barca B and struggle and go right back to Almeria next summer and then have to live his life in the second and third divisions in Spain. Or he could bang in a few goals. And then Barca now have a 19-year-old goal scorer on their books. And they say, hey, maybe there's a player here. Maybe there's something. And then he goes on loan next year as a 20-year-old to a first division club. And now Barcelona have a prospect on their hands to either sell or to integrate into the first team as a striker, which is a position you always need to get. If you can get cheap goals, again, that's the name of the game, right? In transfers, it's cheap. How can you get as many goals as possible for cheap? That's how you run a well-run club.
Well, that was what was so great about signing Gerry Mina. You get a center, you get a center back who's going to score some goals, and that's why we were able to get so much money for him. So, speaking of that, how much value do you think Manaj put on his?
I don't know. Actually, I think that he did have a preseason hat trick. Sure, people were watching, but he had 14 goals last year. He was the
I liked him last year.
Yeah, he was really good, and he is just 24. Yeah. And I think the most important thing for him is why his value is up. He has improved in his 2 years with Barca B. He's improved. And that's the important thing, that other clubs can go, hey, he was kind of a little bit of a bum, literally in the outskirts of the third division when he went to Barca B as a 22-year-old. And now he's scoring 14 goals a year, even as a Spanish third division, scoring 14 goals a year, leading the line, and being an actual striker. So I think there are second division clubs. If I'm Sporting Gijón, if I'm any of those different clubs, if I'm Eibar, who had my entire club completely stripped of talent, I'm looking at Raymond Nagy, and I'm willing to pay. Now that's where it comes, right? I'm worse with the numbers than you. I want to say at this juncture, you're going to get from 3 to 6 million euros for him. What's your number?
How much did we get for Carlos Alenia?
Was it 10?
No, I think, wasn't it like 5 million?
Or 6, yeah. Right, but goals cost more than midfielders. I will say that.
Yeah, but you know, this is we're still like in a COVID.
Yeah.
Football economy, especially in Spain.
I mean, Conrad did go for five though.
I think after 60 signings, I read this crazy stat that after 60 signings so far in La Liga, 39 were free transfers. And I don't know if he has any any pull outside of Spain, although I suppose, you know, he played in Italy previously. What I just thought was very nice for him is, you know, he's keeping the match ball, and whatever happens on his debut for the first team of Barcelona, he scored a hat trick in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to keep that ball for the rest of his life, man.
Yeah.
So, well done, Manaj. Well done, Manaj. That's very cool for him. I don't know. Like, if we weren't so stacked, I would not mind keeping him and letting him score some goals for the first team and then raise his value even more.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's no way. I mean, there's no way. I mean, even if Fati and Dembele are out, you're still having... It seems like Brathwaite won't be sold. The latest reports are that he's actually staying. So if you have Aguero and Brathwaite both coming off your bench as strikers, they're not going to start. So, I mean, that's just a lot of center forward to basically be the backup. And I just can't see them actually keeping him too.
I still think Brathwaite is on his way out. Yeah. Like...
I mean, again, I don't. I think it makes most sense for both him, the player, and the club, but the latest reports are that's not the case, but that can change again, hourly or daily. By the time the show is done, that might have changed again.
It is true that every day I wake up, and every day I'm like, okay, is it too early to go to Mundo Deportivo? But I go anyway. I go to MundoDeportivo.com, and like, ah, damn, nothing. But it's still 7 o'clock. Let me try it like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and then I try again at 9 o'clock. I try again at 10 o'clock, just to see if we sold one of those guys. Oh yeah. My God!
Yeah. Well, I make sure I actually block. If I go to Mundo Deportivo and I see a Neymar rumor, I try to take about a week off. That's what I I take a breath. Same thing with sport.
No, but those rumors are dead, man. That
well, it doesn't mean you can't put him on the cover, Levon. That's the whole. You have to sell papers. Come on, I'm a journalist. That's what we're in the business of. But I mean, who doesn't sell papers? But who's important? And I want to go on the opposite side of Ray Minaj. I mean, we're gonna do Alex Caiado in a second, but I want to go to the younger side now. Alejandro Balde played in the first half. We're talking about the players. Like for me, it's Demir, it's Balde, and it's Gabi, and I don't think I'm missing anybody. I mean, Caiado, yes, is gonna be in the first team. Same thing with Peña. But when you're talking about the players for Barca B, that whether it's based on role, whether it's based on need, Balde at left back is a position of need, if you will, for Barcelona's depth. So we're talking about Balde. We're talking about Demir just because of his high level talent. And we're talking about Gabi because while he is 16, clearly he is very, very special. Yesterday, it was just a lot of short passes, quick decisions, making the safe pass. I think he only played or misplayed one ball in the whole half. But again, no one had stats, so I'm not sure what that exactly is. But clearly, his mind and understanding of the game is far superior of any 16-year-old that is around him or playing at his level. Is he ready for the first team? Absolutely not. But it doesn't mean that he won't be earning experiences to be on the field for a Copa del Rey match or whatever at the age, he'll be 17 soon. So at the age of 17, we've seen 17-year-olds feature in the Copa del Rey. That's not insane. Right. It's in the realm of possibility. So those are the three I kind of mentioned as the high, high levels, and all three, Balde and Gabi, then whichever one I also mentioned, none of them showed me something that told me that they weren't going to be able to carve out a role, not even a role, but to carve themselves out an appearance in the Copa del Rey, or to be on the fringes of first team training, be in first team training more often than the B team training because they're next in line, and basically grooming and making sure. I think this is the important thing too, right? That for a long time, we know there was no pipeline, but to have players like Balde and Gabi know that, hey, this is what's being asked of me in the next year or two to be a first team member, and I'm in first team training. And if I'm just a bit patient, I'm under contract for a while. Balde now renewing today. That was big news too. So he's in the club for the next 2024. So 3 years with a 500 million euro release clause. He's an FC Barcelona player. So Balde can say, hey, by 2023, I'm in the first team and I'm renegotiating that contract for another renewal. And then I'm a first team player. So they didn't show me anything in 45 minutes yesterday that didn't say that, hey, just take your time with them. And the talent is certainly there.
Yeah. I mean, Gavi at that point of the game, you know, I don't think he was ever under pressure. So,
yeah,
good for him. He didn't put a foot wrong, which is great. Balde, I don't think he impressed, but he did not mess up either. Let's see how he develops over the season. I don't think he is ready for meaningful minutes in the first team. I hope that he develops enough so that by the time that we start the Copa del Rey, he gets a game, he gets a start. I also think that for that left-back spot, Dest will start getting some minutes on at left-back now that we have Emerson.
Yep.
Right? So that should take care of that. Who else did we mention? Collado. Now there is an interesting player in terms of what is going to happen with him. Is he good enough for the first team? I don't know. Because again, like, look at the role that he plays. He kind of needs that free role to really bring the best out of him, right? Yep. And is he good enough to already be given a free role in this Barcelona where you have other players who, you know, if Messi doesn't play, then you want to give Dembélé the free role. If Messi and Dembélé don't play, you want to give, I even forgot, Memphis the free role.
Yeah.
So I think Collado is a very talented player, but he is possibly breaking through at the wrong time in this particular team. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's telling that he played as an interior. I mean, it's telling that he had the captain's armband, but he was a captain for Barca B last year. But again, I think it was telling that he played the interior because we always expected that if he was going to be able to break in with the first team, not that it was a replacement for Trincao, but it would be on the right wing. So for him to basically be playing out of position in that first match and even the goal. So I don't think I've ever said a bad word about Collado, but now at 22, what does worry me is that when he scored his goal, the second one of the game, Gymnastique were kind of worn down. And it winds up being a deflected ball that goes in the back of the net. But Collado had dribbled himself into the shooting lane and put it onto his left foot. So it was a fine goal, a fine shot on goal. But looking back at a lot of his goals, now he's awesome on free kicks. As I said, I wish that with Collado, you could do what they do in the NFL where you just have a place kick taker. So whenever Messi needs a break, Collado can stand there as well and take occasional free kicks because he's a really good free kick taker at any level. And I think that's a skill that is limited, but it does matter. But most of the goals he scored in open play last year with Barca B were he was using shooting lanes that aren't going to be available at the top level. And that is what concerns me about his goal scoring moving forward, that I wonder if he can't dribble himself into space, is he going to be able to shoot and find the back of the net when he has a lot less space to shoot? Because I haven't really seen that from him in his career so far. And we're at the point with him where you'd think that a loan would behoove him, but then he returns and he's 23 years old. And is his value going to improve on a loan? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if being on the fringe of the first team makes him more marketable now. And I think it's hard to take emotion out of it too for him, because he's a player that waited, that was patient, that waited a long time to be in the first team. And he's only made those two appearances. Under Ernesto Valverde even, not under Ronald Koeman. So we all want him to be in the first team because he's earned it, because he stayed with the club, he played with Barca B, and you're supposed to get your just reward when you're willing to sacrifice for the club you love. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way. So
did he sacrifice for the club he loves by staying in Barca B, or are you staying in Barca B because you really hope that this will lead to a chance to break through?
I think that's what it is. That even though emotionally he may not feel like he's sacrificing, but career-wise, when he is in his 30s and 40s, he could have said, if I left at 20 when there were offers coming in because I was a promising 20-year-old player and I had gone and played first-team football, I mean, when he may not be sacrificing now, but when he's 40 years old, he's going to know that he might have left money on the table by not leaving for first-team football 2 years prior and staying with Barca B 2 extra years to potentially get into the first team. Yeah, he might not emotionally regret it because his dream was the first team, but financially, he's going to leave money on the table. So from a business sense, I think there is a sacrifice that he'll potentially see later in life.
What offers did he have?
Well, there were offers from Italy that were coming in, and I saw a few from Germany as well. This is like a year or two ago. I think Hoffenheim were interested in him with the style that they were playing, and then there was one or two mid-table clubs in Italy that were also looking. But yeah, it wasn't a big value, it wasn't a big market, but if he had played first-team football at a higher level, there's a good chance that his next payday after that is bigger than this potential payday at 22 or 23 if another club tried to swoop him in. And he also, again, pandemic and market and things change, of course, but...
Sure, but I mean, if you stay at Barca B and you fight for your place and you actually manage to break through into the first team, then that payday
will it's a risk.
Potentially be better than if you had gone to Hoffenheim two seasons ago.
For sure.
Right? So I don't see it as a sacrifice. I see it as a choice. And there are pros and cons to each choice. There are risks and rewards. who's to say it would have worked out at Hoffenheim?
Mm-hmm.
Because if he had gone to Hoffenheim 2 years ago, then gotten that injury over there, then what would have happened to his career?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if he had the injury here at the club where he has spent most of his life, or his professional career at least, Barcelona take a bit more care of you, knowing how talented you are and knowing that there might still be a chance that you break through into the first team. Whereas abroad, maybe they would have discarded him a lot sooner. So this can break both ways.
And I don't think it's done for him too. I think he's in the same camp as Manchu. Manchu just left quicker. Manchu was a player that was at Girona last year, and then he makes the upgrade to Granada this year. Now he'll be in the first team. I mean, not even the first team, but now he'll be in the first division. And we've seen other players too. Gerard Gumbau, remember him? The defensive midfielder. Gerard Gumbau, all of a sudden I looked and he was like, he's like 26, 27 years old now, but he's been playing within the first and second divisions for quite some time now. And he just carved out a good career for himself. And you're right, Al Qaeda will make his money back just by being a good footballer and playing at the top level in Spain. And you'll make your money there. But whether or not he's with Barcelona this year, Trincao leaving, as we said, and we run through the list, I mean, it's tough because for Callado, of what we saw even yesterday, if he's going to play the interior, I mean, he's what, sixth or seventh on that depth chart? Easy. Like, no matter what, he's got to be sixth or seventh on that depth chart. And then if he's on the right wing, is Demir already above him on the right wing because of what Demir could mean for you in 2 years? Or what could mean for you next year? Is Demir already above him on the depth chart? I mean, that's a question you have to realistically ask.
Maybe. And that is what is difficult for those players. That was even difficult for Trincao.
Yeah.
When he signed, right? Because Trincao also signed knowing that, you know, hey, there's Dembele.
And Carlos Perez.
And Messi. Mm-hmm. And Griezmann. And they can all take up that space coming off the right.
Yeah. Yeah, Carlos Perez, as I said, is the most recent one. And he's done really well for himself at Roma. But it just he was the same age, actually, 21, 22. It just didn't work out. But I do want to give some context, too, as we kind of slow this show to the end. The second half lineup of Peña, Igor Gomes, Arnau Camas, Ramos Mingo, Musa Ndiaye, Mateus Pereira, who's, you know, forever a B-teamer, Gabi, Callado, Nils Mortimer, Minaj, and Hiroki Abe were up top. So again, Hiroki Abe, Nils Mortimer, Mateus Pereira, you're talking about B-team players who I wouldn't expect to, maybe you'll see them in the first team, but not because they're going to be first-teamers, just because they're good enough for Barca B, and Koeman will believe that he's going to win a Copa del Rey match with them, not because they're going to be first-team players. But we had a lot of people asking us who Musa and who Igor Gomes was, so I want to just give the quick context. Who were Musa Unde, who played left-back, and Igor Gomes, who played right-back? Well, they're both center-backs, though Igor Gomes did have to deputize at right-back for Barca B last year, but who didn't? They had seven different players play there. And unfortunately, like one of the other six players played right back for Barca B last year, he got injured and missed much of the season. So he's 20, by the way, now, having been signed for the Juvenil A from Brazil in the summer of 2019 from a team I'd never heard of. Have you ever heard of Coimbras? And I'm probably saying that wrong because it's Brazilian, but it's Coimbra. I'd never heard of them, but he was signed from their U20 team. So some scout saw something somewhere and brought him in from that club. So I think he's a B team player at the time being. He wasn't signed with like a ton of fanfare or as a high prospect, but he could be a fine center back for the B team as a rotation player and see what you get, you know, in a year or two. And then the other one is Musa. Meanwhile, recently turned 19, so he's a bit younger. He was signed last summer from Aspires Academy in Qatar, the famous football school in Qatar. He's one of the Senegalese players that went to play there, so he's one of the Senegalese connections. He was originally rumored to be signed for Barca B last summer, but the club deemed that he wasn't ready yet, and so he did last season with the U19s. And of what I saw from him, I mean, now he'll be playing with Barca B this year, but, you know, he is a center back more than Igor Gomes, so he was actually more at a position at left back. He pretty much never played that, and I thought he was positive. But last year for the U19s, he was rough. I mean, you clearly saw why he was with the U19s last year and not with the Barca B. But he's a guy that, because those kind of players coming, again, playing the Aspire Academy, they oftentimes are not actually playing competitive football until they're 15, 16, 17 years old. So it's kind of, to me, like, actually, Giannis Antetokounmpo just won the NBA title, and Joel Embiid's an all-star. It actually, there is a connection there that these guys improve quite a lot in a short amount of time. So I'm not out on Musa. He hasn't impressed me, or he hasn't done anything to even think that he'll start for Barca B. But when you don't start playing competitively in this way and you're trying to learn as much as you can at 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, you can improve a lot more than players that have been playing seven aside at FC Barcelona since they were 7 years old. Like, their trajectory is going to be a bit slower than these players are going to have a rapid incline, especially a player like Musa, who can rely on some of his physical gifts to get rid of some of those mistakes early on until his mind catches up with his body. Because physically, he's quick, he's strong in the air already, but he's still just 19 and still has a lot about the actual game of football to learn. So yeah, put him in the back seat. And if you see him for the first team, it'll be at 22 or 23, I think.
I think it's very difficult for a football player to start so late.
Yeah.
To learn football so late and to play at Barcelona. So the good thing here is that he showed a lot of personality yesterday on the pitch. I don't think people looked at him realizing that he was a center back. So yeah, good on him. Good on him. Going forward, the person that I most want to see is Nico Gonzalez. That I'm very curious about. How he does when he starts getting minutes with that first team. He was out with gastritis, which is usually a euphemism for whatever reason he is not playing. I think Xavi said that famously once.
Yeah,
that,
right.
Whenever you see in the newspapers that somebody's not playing because they have a tummy ache, something else is going on.
Hmm.
I wonder what it could be, though, because he just renewed, right? So there shouldn't be anything fishy going on.
You know, I don't want to break your brain, but it could also actually be a stomach ache. It could actually have been some actual issue. So hopefully we will see him for the rest of the preseason. For some of the other names that we didn't see, for those wondering, Andre Orellana, the other defensive midfielder, he's out of contract and we're waiting to see if the club wants to bring him back and his camp can find a number. Unlike Ilash Moriba, who's with the B team because he's not signing that first team renewal, it seems like Hunter Oriana's camp does want him to return to the club, but the club is kind of trying to figure out if he's worth, at the age of 21, paying that next contract for. So I think this actually comes down to the club's decision more than Hondro's, and unfortunately for the player. So it's a little different. It's not that he's holding out for the club. It seems like the club's holding out for him, unfortunately. And then the other new signing from PSG, Kaiser Ruiz Atil, he and Barca B regular Miko Marmol were both out due to injury. They actually, the two of them would have started that second half. They are, you know, they'll be Barca B starters as well. They were both out to COVID, as I said. And then right back Sergio Rosanes is still out with that ACL injury for a few more months. And having missed basically the last 2 years of his career as an 18 and 19-year-old, I'm really interested to see what he can do for Barca B this season as he turns 21 in January. So, you know, there are other players featuring for Barca B that we didn't get to see. So this isn't even the Barca B squad in that second half that to its full capacity, if you will. So, again, I'm trying to figure out from that first preseason what Barca B's starting 11 is going to be more than I am even trying to get anything from the first team. Because again, we did the whole thing on Puig, and I think that's really the only argument we can make. We went almost an hour on a preseason match, Levon. I think that is a cardinal sin of podcasting and of football podcasting. But you have anything else for the preseason?
No, man.
Yeah.
I'm just wishing you good luck with the editing.
Well, good luck with going to the match for the Girona. We'll get your opinion on that next week. For those who watch Pedri, Eric Garcia, and Mingueza out now with an injury, probably for the tournament. That's unfortunate. But for Pedri and Eric Garcia, as I said, with Pedri, if he makes the final of the Olympics, that's 72 matches. And for those who, I don't know, if you're in the U.S. and you stayed up late, not even stayed up, but if you got up early to watch the 0-0 draw with Egypt, just like me, I'm so sorry that we did that. We make mistakes in life, and that was a mistake, watching that 0-0 draw with Egypt. That was a rough one. As I joked to Barcelona, they basically started four center backs and six attacking midfielders. But unlike in the days of Fabregas and David Silva and Iniesta and Xavi, well, this wasn't that. And so it was a tough one. It was a tough one to get through. But hey, hopefully the next one is better. And I should also use my DVR function. So I think that's probably what I learned. That's the lesson.
Are you going to watch any of the other Olympic games?
Yeah, I've been using the DVR function. I actually did watch Rolfo of the Femini team. She played okay against the women's national team for the U.S., but it was a 3-0 win for Sweden. Again, Rolfo was not an important part, but she had a good match. I mean, she was not a net loss for Sweden, obviously, and I'm interested to see the player she'll be. So, yeah, I was actually doing my homework scouting Rolfo as I was watching the U.S. women. And, yeah, the rest of it's kind of fun. I mean, the rest of it's the stuff you only really take in every 4 years.
Don't you think that it's insane that Florentino Perez can stop Angel Di Maria from playing a World Cup final, and we cannot even stop Pedri from going to the Olympics in a summer where he already played in the Euros?
Well, I looked into this. Spain's team is so much more talented than everybody else's on paper, because Spain actually has a law that I think it dates back to even the dictatorship, that Spanish players, regardless of what club you play for, you have to go and play for Spain for the Olympics. There is like it's in whatever, like, by registering as a Spanish national team player with the FA, that is in your contract, like it's in the clause. And I think Spain is the only country that actually has that clause in those contracts. And that's just what I saw. So yes, Spain is the one exception as to how, like, to why Pedri and Eric Garcia had to play in the Olympics.
That's just great.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, it's cool. Cool bit of news. So we end there with another edition of the show. We want to thank you for tuning in again. Follow him on Twitter, at Barcelev. There's a few little special characters, but it's always in the show notes. Just click on his name and it'll be sent right to his Twitter account. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. We have our closed season group, the Barcelona Podcast. We're getting their opinions and their thoughts about the preseason. Ask the questions, we let you in. I ask the questions, you answer them, and I let you in. And then on Patreon, I have some stuff going on there. And then on YouTube, thinking about these match reviews, I'm liking the feedback. If you give me feedback at the Barcelona Podcast, I'm still trying to figure out content plan. You know, we've been doing the two shows with the podcast, but what I'm going to be doing on YouTube, what I'm doing on Patreon, I'm still trying to figure out that for the new season. And then also what's happening with FC Barcelona on Twitch, I'm expected to return there. So there's some breaking news for everybody who listens to the show at this point. Because anyone who's still with us, Levon, those are the people who are really in it for us. So I want to thank all of them for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barcelona.
Escalabaza.